A lot of people don't realize, I think, what goes into making a record like that. Could you run down, just sort of generally, the steps that you had to go through to come up with a finished product?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. First of all, you have a session, you know, you have a song. You take a song, like, if you're lucky enough. Say one day I said to Van Dyke, I'd say, let's do Do Re Mi. I think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. So we'd sit down. It's hard for me to work serious work anywhere else but in the studio, because there's an atmosphere there. It's a grim place to be, a studio, you know. There's no relief there. You can't sit down. You can't relax. You can't look at TV. You can't read a book. There's nothing to do but work. Mm-hmm. So you get in there, you shut the door, lock the door, and there's no clocks, you know. So we'd sit down and I'd play him Do Re Mi, you know, maybe. And then he'd play along with me for a while, and then we'd get into say, let's try to do it here, let's do this little thing there, work up an arrangement. Then, since we couldn't rely on musicians who could come in, since we didn't rehearse, because we never knew from one session to the next what we'd be doing, you see. It was all experimental, and the album is pretty much an experimental record. So we'd go in, two of us, usually lay down some kind of basic track that we'd come up with. Guitar and piano. Mm-hmm. Take that nucleus, you know, and then maybe go in the next day with some other players and either overdub them or maybe do it again with these other players once we had a sense of structure. Mm-hmm. And change it. I mean, some of these tunes, Franz Chance, I think 8 sessions brought forth that tune. Mm-hmm. Now that's an instance where nobody could play along with me on that song. We had one session where we had a rhythm section in there. They couldn't learn it. I mean, they just couldn't.
It's stereo. That's
like that? Okay. Good. They couldn't learn the tune, so we canceled the session, and I went in and played the guitar part, mm-hmm. the basic thing, and sang it. And Van Dyke put on the piano, which we later erased, you know. But he put it on for another reference, so you have two ideas going. Then I put on a mandolin mm-hmm. rhythm thing. Then I put on a mandola, which is like a baritone mandolin, to complement the first mandolin. Mm-hmm. Then he put on, and he saw another way to play the piano part, so he'd play the piano part again. Then by that time, it was ready for a bass, so I sat down and I played the bass part, just sat in the control booth, ran the thing over and over, and we worked out a bass part for it. You know, that takes maybe 3 or 4 hours. Then the next day, he hears another piano part, so he's going to play it a different way. Maybe I change the mandolin a little bit, see, so it grows in that way. And finally we come up with it, the thing that sounds like a unit. So he got Richie Hayward in there, poor guy, sat him down for 4 hours and put him through, you know, the piece. Totally blind, it was like flying in the fog, you know. He didn't have any sense of the structure of the tune, except we told him what to do. He was good enough, and he is, to play it well and finally learn how the tune goes. So now he can play the tune with me, say if we perform it, and play it with a sense of the whole song. And that's the reason that there's so few people in L.A. that can do that, was why you have to do most of this work yourself. So all these things are process pieces, kind of like some artists do create things that way. They start and they just work it through. On the other hand, available space was pretty clear cut, you know, that was obvious. It's just a riff, so you get people to play behind it, you know, tell them a few things, which you need. You do need a room sound, you need a group sound for a nice feeling. If you did everything like Franz Chance, it wouldn't sound so good. You know, a whole album of Franz Chance type music mm-hmm. would be kind of lopsided, you know.
Yeah. One of the nice things about the record is that the material does, it's in a similar vein, except for, I guess, One Meatball and Old Kentucky Home. They sort of stand out as different in kind from the rest. Mm-hmm. But you don't get tired of listening to this record. I've played it, I must have played it 100 times.
Oh, great.
I'm not tired of it at all. Are you... It's been sort of a sleeper. I know that I discovered it by chance. Somebody, I happened to be at somebody's house, and they said, Ry Cooder, and I said, Ry Cooder, well, let's hear it. And I said, wow. And I began to try to turn other people onto the record.
Yeah.
And no one has heard of it. I'd go into a record store.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming known now, but how long has it been out?
Been out since November,
mm-hmm.
which isn't really very long in terms of a record like this, you know, unheralded as it was.
I see. I thought it'd come out in the summer or something.
No, it was supposed to. But there's always a merchandising problem, you know. They just don't get around to that many places. And I think that record companies need encouragement so that they can go ahead and do a job, which is why I'm on this tour. They kind of threw me out to see if I could make a dent. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been doing okay, so based on that, they'll probably, escalate their efforts behind the record, you know.
Yeah.
And I hope so anyhow. Because it's an album that's not supposed to go in and out. It's got kind of built-in longevity to it, because it doesn't take anything from current, you know, music, really.
Yeah.
I can't find the right word, but
it's a classic.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. That's one way of saying it. I guess it's timeless kind of music, for one thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'm not interested in pop music like Top 40 Radio really too much. I don't relate to it, and I don't like it that well.
Mm-hmm.
But this music is all old, you know, and yet what we've done with it is try to push it in front. And, I mean, we got some good things. The Gavin Report, if you're familiar with that,
mm-hmm.
this had the idea that it was kind of a prediction, a trend-setting thing. He called Pigmeat a trendsetter, you know, for instance,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I don't write that much, and I'm going to try to write some tunes. You have to, you know. It's important. But as far as taking these old tunes are concerned, if you can get to where a tune like Pigmeat is musically, it's very interesting, you know. It's not just an old blues.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, I'm so blue, you know. It's chord structure and everything is good. What happens in it? A rhythm, you know. So there's no reason to say that it's just, there's no reason to think of it as archaic, you know, or anything.
Right.
It can be made into a piece, you know, that'll, and this whole album's supposed to be like that, and I think it can sell if they work on it. You do have to have help from the record company,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'm glad you feel that way about it. I always did, and I'm just never sure, you know, what other people think.
Well, I just think it's one of the best records I've heard in a long
right.
time. You gonna get any singles out from it?
Well, we've had two, and they didn't do anything. They were just feelers. I'm thinking of re-recording How Can a Poor Man Stand Such Times and Live, which is, I think, a really, that's a gem, that one.
Mm-hmm.
Re-recording it more like a smaller sound, more like a single,
mm-hmm.
stronger beat, you know.
I saw your show Tuesday night,
yeah.
and I was trying to watch what you did because I play a little guitar myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, A, that you seem not to be using any picks. Is that right?
I use a thumb pick only.
You use a thumb pick?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I had this idea that you were... I seem to almost hear the fat of your thumb pulling on those strings sometimes.
That's just a question of technique, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like on that blue guitar, that Fender, I got really heavy strings.
Mm.
You know, and so I can snap them with the thumb pick, you know. So I don't use the thumb pick like a flat pick. I'm using it. I'd use my thumb
mm-hmm.
for the tone, but the thumb pick is worn out enough so that it's soft, you know, and it gets a kind of a sound like what you describe. You know?
Oh, I see. You changed guitars at one point.
Yeah.
Is the Fender, like, especially fretted for slide or something?
No, it's tuned in open chord. All slide work that I do is in an open chord. For instance, it's G or D tuning. So you can hit all your major chords, you know, straight up and down with a bottleneck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The red guitar, which is on Pigmeat, is tuned regular with the 6 tuned down to D. Because
mm-hmm.
it modulates through D
yeah.
in the key of C with that low note, you know. That's the unique thing about that song. And the Martin I use for Dark as the Night, and it's tuned to D, the acoustic guitar. And I get kind of, sometimes I forget what I'm doing with all those instruments, you know. I forget to put the capo on or something. But the Fender is set up kind of the play slide. The strings are flat and they're real heavy. And you couldn't pick lead on them at all. They just don't bend, you know. Whereas the Gibson's got very thin strings on it for a different sound.
Yeah. Is bottleneck more difficult style of play than regular guitar playing?
Yeah, I think it's the hardest thing. I mean, it's a fretless idea. You can't just play on your fret. You've got to have a sense of a, like a violin, you know, a scale of the thing down in your head.
Yeah.
And then the speed, you got to have speed. You build that up with practice, the accuracy, and the vibrato is the last thing that you can get. I mean, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do all those things well on the electric because you can't really control electric bottleneck that well. Now, guys play slide, what I would call slide, like your rock and roll slide guitar,
mm-hmm.
which is very simple and just involves sliding from one place to another. It's not really playing a line, you know, mm-hmm. or if you play a simple line, it's easy. But to play like regular bottleneck with the whole idea of the possibilities of that,
yeah.
you know, which is are really enormous. I mean, Blind Willie Johnson could play any complicated singing line, you know, that you could want to sing, he could play probably with the bottleneck. That involves a lot of work. So it's taken me, I'd say, 8 years, you know, to get that together, you know, and it's very difficult. And a lot of kids play it now, but they don't play what I think of as being bottleneck. They do play just slide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some kids on this tour getting into it because it's fashionable now. People like it, and it's evident everywhere. I mean, I hear it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, he never did. Now there's a bottleneck tune on the AM. It's a hit. Funny thing, you know. So it's good. It's a real good thing to work at. It takes a long time, though. And I just haven't heard too many people play who are able to play like new music in the old way, you know. And that's the thing, to try to adapt it. Because just to slide the thing around, you can do that electronically, too. Jimi Hendrix, you know, just slides a chord up and down. You're not really
yeah.
doing anything. But I'd say it's the hardest thing. It's probably as hard as flamenco, you know.
Mm.
It's one of those tough things.
Yeah. How much do you use your fingers for fingering notes in addition to the...
I play runs with my fingers, you know, like chords.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm singing, I can't play the bottleneck very well at the same time. It's hard to do that, you know. So I have three free fingers I can play with, and then I got the bottleneck on my last finger, so I can't do both at once too much, but I mean I can be playing chords in the open tuning,
mm-hmm.
like an accompaniment, you know, and then play the bottleneck after, intersperse lines, you know.
Yeah. You're standing up singing and doing the sort of rock and roll thing on the tour. Is this new to you, or have
yeah,
you done
it? Yeah, it sure is. I've never done it before. I've never tried to play and sing at the same time, and it's really rough, you know, because I got to watch what I'm doing. You know, I'll get it down so I won't have to, but I got to watch what I'm doing, and I can barely do it. Sometimes if things aren't going quite right, I hit the wrong fret, and it's a mess, you know. I'm trying to hit the directional microphones, you know. I'm trying to get, like, in the mic, and I'm trying to play
yeah.
accurately, and it's hard. It's rough. It just takes practice, too, you know. Because I've never really been into it.
Is this what you want to do, or do you want to get back to the studio?
Well, I want to record another album, for one thing. Mm. Cheaper album. And a more obvious kind of record. This was general, you know, in a way. I'd like to record a more specific kind of a record. More blues-oriented. More solo stuff.
Mm.
That was a guess, you know, to do Darkest of Night. People really like it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good to know. I don't mind performing. It's so new to me that I haven't really had any clear thoughts about it. I'm just trying to get from one job to the next on this tour, you know, without falling apart, you know, without losing anything.
What's the worst thing that's happened to you on the tour when you were performing?
I broke two strings in one night.
Oh, God.
I break mandolin strings all over the place. Yeah. They're in high tension and they break easily. And I broke the melodic string on my bottleneck guitar, the high E,
mm-hmm.
on How Can a Poor Man, which is like the last tune in the set and should be the best one. And I was, you know, that was it. I couldn't even cover for it.
Mm-hmm.
Any string but that. I mean, I was really mortified.
Mm-hmm.
So, but other than that, things have been going pretty well. It's a hassle because the band I've got with me is not, you know, they're not really into the music that much except for the piano player.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a hell of a time coming along with it, you know, and they're doing about 50% So I'm not getting the support that I'm sort of accustomed to, like from the guys that played on the record. They couldn't come with me, unfortunately. Yeah. So it's just rough, you know, but it's good experience.
How are you traveling?
Traveling by bus and plane. Bus when we got short hops, you know, like from from Detroit to Cleveland, which is that kind of a thing. It's rough on the bus. I hate buses. Mm. I hate planes, too. But, you know, it's a long trip. It's 4 weeks, 6 weeks, you know. Yeah. It's a long time to be out.
How long have you been out at this point?
About 2 weeks.
Yeah. You tired yet?
Yeah, I'm plenty tired. New York makes me tired. You know, it's a nervous town. I get very tired around here.
Oh, yes, I do, too. I live here.
Yeah.
How are the audiences receiving you?
Real well. Right? Yeah, that was nice. I mean, sometimes they know me from the radio station hype, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't, but usually it. The only town that was completely dead was Cincinnati. Mm. There was nothing going on, and I just don't know why that was. But usually it's been good, you know. They like the stuff, especially the solo. I do Brownsville by myself on the mandolin, and Dark as the Night. They really enjoy that. People like that a lot, and I think somehow or another, the me and Beefheart complement each other somehow. And that's a nice thing for the audience, you know. They get two entirely different things, and there's no competition at all. So.
Yeah, that was good. You really feel like you're getting your money's worth.
Well, that's good, because you're sure paying a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
$4 in that place is pretty far out.
Yeah, especially if you're sitting behind one of those pillars.
Yeah, it's too bad. I'm sorry. When I found out how much it was, I felt bad, you know. But I think it's a good show.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, good.
Listen, let's run down, just out of curiosity, I'd like to... get the sources for these songs, or
well,
what you would consider the sources that exist on recording.
Yeah, the Alimony tune, that's a 45. Tommy Tucker, of course, did High Heel Sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that record. Alimony came out about a year later, and it didn't make any difference. I mean, but it was a great record, a beautiful record. If anybody's, if you can get it from Village Oldies, and people ought to pick up on it. It's a real good tune. France Chance is I call it that. It's actually called something else. Joe Calicott was a guy who was found, unfortunately, late in life, rediscovered after many years. I never even heard of him as a young man in the discography magazines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a blues singer down in Mississippi who is just fantastic. Great guitar player and singer, and he died shortly after I made this record. So it was just a kind of a, what you call a lyric commonplace. There's nothing unusual about it except the last verse, you know, that's lyrically is a little strange. What he was talking about, I don't know. Blue started crawling in England, run me in France. I don't know what he meant, you know. But that was why I thought that was a funny verse, and that's why I wanted to do the tune.
Is that on a record?
Yeah, it's on an Arhooly record called The Mississippi Blues, Volume 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that's worth getting. He's an excellent player. One Meat Ball, of course, was a pop tune hit for Josh White in 41. Do Re Mi's Woody Guthrie's famous song about migratory workers in California. And then there's the Randy Newman piece. And How Can a Poor Man, the blind Alfred Reed, was a fiddle player in the 30s. And he was like a social singer. He actually was a topical singer, you know, singing about the Depression, you know. I think that's a great tune for any time, you know, it's a beautiful song. And his version of it, which is on the New Lost City Ramblers did it on their Depression Songs album on Folkways. There's a million verses to it, so I just did three.
Yeah.
A lot of things about how much corn costs, you know, and steak and everything. It's funny. Goes on and on. Available Space is just an old riff that we put in there. Pig Meat, the Lead Belly tune. Police Dog Blues, now that's a ragtime piece by Blind Blake. That can be found on this Biograph album, Volume 1 of Blind Blake reissues. Very fantastic guitar player. So good that everything he does sounds easy until you go to play it. It's unbelievably hard, that piece. That's in D tuning too, in case anybody's interested. Going to Brownsville, John Estes, famous song. And then the last piece is Blind Willie Johnson, which I learned off of a off of Frederick Ramsey's anthology of blues on Folkways, Jazz Volume 1, I think it's called. This is a 12-record set. And it's like the only piece he ever did that was wordless piece, you know. He hums his record of it. He and his wife hum through the thing. Very eerie song. So that's it. That's what took 8 months. You know, we got a lot of tunes we recorded that we didn't, you know, that are in the can. May do something with them sometime.